Harry Potter and the Orb of Exuberance by Fezzador. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of J.K. Rowling. Chapter 27. The Orb of Exuberance. For the next week, Harry did his best to keep his head down and avoid conflict. Serving detention was embarrassing enough, but getting lost whilst serving it was something the rest of the school wouldn't live down. A minor incident broke out during their weekly flying lesson at the Proving Grounds, but Harry was determined not to let it escalate. While Harry, Othniel, and Tallulah were cleaning and polishing their broomsticks, Flynn Replogle and his cronies couldn't resist the temptation to mock the three-horned serpents.
"Hey, Scarhead," Replogle clucked. "Heard you got lost while serving detention. I'm surprised you came back all in one piece. Goldfarb sure didn't. Rumor says she might not be coming back next year. If she doesn't, the whole school will blame you."
His goons, Lowell Madigan and Philip Bungus, chortled at the jabs. Harry glared at the trio.
"I don't care," he spat. "Samantha doesn't blame me, and that's all that matters at the end of the day."
Tallulah smiled at Harry and nodded her approval.
"She doesn't matter at the end of the day," Replogle grumbled. "She's just another commoner. She'll never amount to anything in the wizarding world, even if she graduates."
He jabbed a thumb to his chest.
"Old money wizards like me have always run the show, and they always will. Ain't nothing gonna change that. You best remember that."
Harry seethed. "There's a lot more to being a wizard than having money and influence," he argued. "And there's a lot more to her than what you believe. You could stand to learn from her example. She's honest, she's kind, she works hard. All of which are foreign concepts to you." Before Replogle could retort, a loud ahem came from the other side of their broom upkeep tables. Both boys turned to their left and saw glowering Coach Croom giving them a steely glare.
"I would have thought that y'all would have learned your lesson by now," he grumbled.
He fixed his glare on Harry.
"Especially you, Mr. Potter. Considering you've just served detention, I'd imagine you wouldn't be bucking for another one so soon."
Harry shook his head.
No, sir."
Croom nodded curtly.
"That's what I thought, Potter. Now y'all best get back to maintaining your brooms. If y'all can't stop harassing each other, then I have no problem flunking you and having you repeat introductory flying next term."
He shook his head and grumbled something incomprehensible under his breath as he turned heel and continued making his rounds. Once everyone had returned to their stations, Tallulah just shook her head at Harry, her shoulder-length loose auburn curls jiggling about.
"I don't know why those idiots can't just leave you alone, Harry."
"It's because they think they're better than me and will take every opportunity to let me know it," sighed Harry. "Replogle and his lackeys may come from rich, powerful families, but I'd take mine over there 7 days a week and twice on Sundays."
"I feel the same way, Harry," agreed Tallulah.
"I don't come from a rich family, either by magical or non-magical standards, but I was raised to respect other people, even those less fortunate than myself."
"Hear, hear," chimed in Othniel. "Replogle wouldn't know what he'd do if he woke up tomorrow morning flat broke."
After lunch the next day, Harry met with Professor Lupin in his office for the third time in as many weeks. To Harry's delight, a chalice with puckerberry juice and a puckerberry jelly roll awaited him.
"Hello, Harry," greeted Lupin with a friendly grin.
"I hear your friend Mrs. Goldfarb is mending rather nicely. To my understanding, she may never fully realize her potential as a witch, but her faculties are still intact enough for her to continue her magical education."
Harry returned the grin.
"Good afternoon, Professor. Yeah, I've visited her a couple of times. She was very happy to see me, that's for sure. And my friend Anastasia's already spent a couple of hours tutoring her. Samantha was very appreciative."
Lupin chuckled.
"That doesn't surprise me in the slightest. Miss Harrison is so much like your mum."
Harry's face suddenly brightened.
"Oh, I invited Nova Woodward to Surrey for Thanksgiving. She said she'd be excited to come with me and meet her birth parents. I know the past two Thanksgiving breaks had to have been lonely for her. I just owled my aunt and uncle a couple of nights ago just to make sure they're cool with it."
"As luck would have it," Lupin replied. "Earlier this week I have received an invitation from your aunt and uncle and your godfather Sirius to join them for the Thanksgiving holiday. So it's a distinct possibility that the three of us will be traveling together."
"Wow," exclaimed Harry. "That's awesome." He cocked his head.
"Have you ever been to Canada?"
"I've spent a little bit of time in the Toronto Wizarding District," admitted Lupin. "But I've never been to British Columbia, so it'll be my first time in that part of the country."
He furrowed his eyebrows.
"You look like you have something on your mind, Harry. A question, perhaps."
Harry bit his lip.
Maybe. I mean, I guess I do, but I don't know if you're the one who can answer it. How well do you know Ilvermorny's history?"
Lupin chuckled. I don't necessarily know everything about Ilvermorny, but I've read quite a few texts on the school's history, and I'm also aware of a few legends that may be equally factual as they are fiction.
Okay, sighed Harry. Do you know anything about an orb? Like this really, really powerful wand?
When I got my wand a couple of weeks ago, this wizard sage, I think is what he really is, he told me that my wand is exceptionally powerful, but there's another wand out there that's even more powerful than this. If it gets into Lord Voldemort's hands, he could destroy the world.
Lupin inhaled as he steepled his fingertips.
You must be referring to the Orb of Exuberance, a legendary wand that's rumored to be so powerful that it can cast whatever spell the holder is thinking without the need of incantation. In other words, it gives them the power to use magic strictly from the force of will. Their magical core is amplified many times over. For example, a basic disarming spell would be more powerful by several magnitudes. It could make the beholder virtually invincible.
Harry's eyes widened.
So was that orb actually, you know, real?
Lupin blinked before nodding. I have every reason to believe that it is. According to legend, the witch who tried to overtake Ilvermorny shortly after its founding, Gormleth Gaunt, made a blood pact with the fallen angel Lucifer. In exchange for 13 mortal souls, he crafted an unholy wand from dogwood and used a fragment of one of his own teeth as the core. He gave it to Gormleth, who intended to use it to get back at her niece, Iseult Seyr, who was one of the founders of Ilvermorny. With that, Gormleth terrorized colonial America, both magical and non-magical alike, and almost certainly would have laid claim to our school along with her followers when, by sheer luck, a Pukwudgie named William fired an arrow that pierced her heart.
What became of the wand? Asked Harry, completely fascinated by Lupin's tale.
And what exactly is a Pukwudgie? Isn't that one of the houses here?
Gormleth's body was burned, but Chadwick and Wedge to boot, two of the founders of Ilvermorny, were unable to come to a consensus on how to destroy the relic. So they simply buried it deep below the castle in hopes it would never be found. A sudden rush of anxiety coursed throughout Harry's body.
I think I have an idea where the orb is. He looked at Lupin with a pained expression.
Please keep this to yourself if you can help it.
Lupin nodded. I'll keep it to myself unless it's absolutely vital that the headmaster should be made aware.
Harry sighed and looked down on the floor.
When I was down in that underground tunnel with Samantha a few days ago, there's this bright grotto. It looks sort of naturally made, but it also looks like it was partly crafted by humans, too. Not far from when we found that typhon, there was this door that looked like it was sealed tighter than Fort Knox. There was something that was just, I don't know, beckoning me to open the door, even though I don't think I know how. It wasn't really a voice, more like a force of sorts. I can't help but wonder if the orb was hidden somewhere behind that fortified door.
Lupin just stared at Harry blankly, before rubbing his fingers through his short, grizzled beard in thought.
I have no reason to doubt you. After all, you were able to communicate with the typhon, whereas I think it's highly unlikely there's a single student or faculty member that can utter a single syllable of parcel tongue.
His lips then curved upward into a slight smirk.
As for your other question, Pukwudgies are short magical creatures, not unlike goblins or house elves, that have been a part of Ilvermorny's heritage ever since its birth. They're reclusive by nature and generally distrusting of humans, yet they're brave and loyal. If it weren't for William's intervention over 300 years ago, Ilvermorny as we know it wouldn't exist.
So, are you going to tell Professor Fontaine that I think I know about the location of the orb? Harry asked.
Lupin looked at Harry thoughtfully for a moment before replying,
Not today. I see no reason to broach the subject when there should be ample security to deter nearly any mortal.
Can it be destroyed? Asked Harry.
Surely there's a way to do it.
There is, sighed Lupin. But to my knowledge, it requires the use of dark magic. Fiendfire can destroy it, but it's an utterly destructive and chaotic spell, so much that the Carter's own survival is not guaranteed.
Harry could only gulp.
Lupin chuckled.
Well, I suppose it's time for me to get ready for my next class. Perhaps we can discuss some lighter topics the next time.
And you're welcome to invite Miss Slater and Mr. Beckett if they find it agreeable.
Harry grinned.
Sounds good, Professor. See you next time.
Friday morning at breakfast, Anna squealed in delight as the school owls fluttered in the mess hall and delivered parcels and letters as per usual. The unmistakable Hogwarts seal meant only one thing.
It was a response from her friend from across the pond, Daphne Greengrass. She eagerly tore into the letter and digested every stylishly written word. Daphne's penmanship was nothing short of divine, certainly a notch better than Anna's, who had lovely handwriting skills of her own. Anna couldn't help but smile at the photograph of a tiny 11-year-old blonde bombshell. Daphne's smile looked so nervous, Anna thought. Daphne's Gryffindor uniform strongly resembled Anna's horned serpent uniform, except for the color scheme.
"Let me see,"
Tallulah beckoned as Anna whipped out a parchment and a quill. Anna handed over Daphne's photo to Tallulah, who grinned.
"Oh, she's cute. I wonder who styles her hair."
"She probably has it charmed," replied Anna. "She comes from a magical family, so I'm sure beautification charms are like second nature to her." Her grin broadened. "And yes, Daphne is a very pretty girl." Tallulah then handed the photo to Harry, who nodded in approval. "She is rather pretty," he murmured. "But not as pretty as Anna," he finished mentally. He then handed the photo to Othniel, who let out a loud, shrill wolf whistle. Smack! Tallulah swatted Othniel on the elbow and followed it up with a sharp glare. Othniel, in turn, gave Tallulah a dramatic eye roll before giving the photo back to Anna. She scarcely paid any attention as she was already writing her reply.
20 September 1991. Dear Daphne, I'm glad to hear you're liking your house and your overall experience at Hogwarts so far. I have a friend named Nova whose father was sorted into Gryffindor over 20 years ago, as a matter of fact. To answer your questions, blood purity isn't really a thing in magical North America. Rather, we have two groups, old money families who have a disproportionate amount of power in Macusa, and commoners, which over 80% of witches and wizards fall under, myself included. It's possible for commoners to get lucrative congressional positions after graduation, but much more difficult without family connections. I love reading in my free time, fantasy, romance, mysteries, you name it. I'm not very good at painting, I'm afraid, but I do love music. Like yourself, I enjoy singing, but I also play the piano and violin. My favorite food is tacos, but I love lasagna too. Oh, there's a chance I might be coming to Hogwarts in the spring. I made the Horned Serpent Quiz Bowl team this term as a starter. And if my team wins the Ilvermorny Quiz Bowl Cup, we get to represent Ilvermorny for the Interscholastic Quiz Bowl competition. Maybe we'll get to meet up. And here are two photos of me. The first is me in my formal robes. We just wear them for certain occasions. They're rather similar to yours, except for the cover scheme, and the second is what I wear most days. It's a lot more comfortable, if you ask me. And thank you for sending me this very nice picture of yourself. You're a very lovely girl. With love from Ilvermorny, Anastasia.
She then rolled up the parchment and whistled for Hedwig, who took the note and fluttered out of the mess hall along with the rest of the school owls. For the full text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the AO3 page of Fezzador. Music is The Chamber by Kevin MacLeod. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, as well as a link to my Discord server and other ways to support what I do. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.